On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Republican Party runs everything in Washington these days, from the White House to Capitol Hill, and the GOP is fighting mad with itself. A huge majority of Americans, nearly 70% now, believe the GOP-led country is headed in the wrong direction. The Republican Congress has sent deficit spending out of control, and no group is angrier about that than the Republican base. On issue after issue, Americans now say they trust Democrats more than Republicans to lead on the war, on corruption, on health care and the economy, and midterm elections are coming. Up next on Point, Republicans speak out on the Republican Party in trouble. A week ago, we talked with Democrats about their troubles and ambitions. Today, we talk with GOP people inside, looking at what's going on. Joining me now from Washington is David Keene. He is chairman of the American Conservative Union, the nation's oldest conservative grassroots organization. He was national political director for George H.W. Bush's 1980 presidential race and a senior advisor to former Senator Bob Dole. David Keene, thanks very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, as always.
And from Columbia, South Carolina, longtime Republican strategist Warren Tompkins. He's founder of the political consulting group Tompkins, Kennard & Associates, worked in South Carolina, has worked in South Carolina politics for nearly two decades, was general consultant to Lindsey Graham in his successful 2003 bid for the U.S. Senate, helped George Bush get tough with John McCain in the 2000 presidential primaries, and was Atlantic region chair for the Bush-Cheney 04 campaign. Warren Tompkins, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
David Keene, first to you. I'm looking here at Republican strategists and analysts and pollsters all over saying things look lousy. How bad is it?
Well, right now it's pretty bad. But what you have to realize is that there are about 2.5 political lifetimes between now and November. The parallels with 94 are in some ways striking, although the Republican crisis at this point probably isn't as great as the Democratic one was at that time, which is not much comfort because the turnover doesn't have to be as great as it was then. But at this point in 1994, the public was beginning to get fed up with Washington. By summertime, they were turning against incumbents in great numbers, but it wasn't until fall that that turned into an anti-democratic tide. Michael Barone, who may be the best analyst of this sort of thing back in 94, didn't write until the last week in July that there was a possibility that the Democrats could take could lose the Congress on the basis of what was happening. The bottom line then is that the Republicans are in trouble. The president and the party's base has been eroding largely because of things that they have done or not done. But if they have any sense of history and if they can learn from what happened to the other party, they still have time to get their act together. Whether they will or not is going to be open to question and is what people ought to be watching for the next month or so.
Warren Tompkins, how do you see it? You say you haven't seen things this bad for the Republicans in four election cycles. Why is the GOP in such a pickle?
Well, we've kind of lost our way, I believe. I mean, we now that we're in majority, we've forgotten what got us there. And I think part of it is we are all affected by the war. But I hear more complaints in a lot of ways about our lack of discipline on spending matters and the fact that, frankly, we're spending money like drunken sailors up there, and that's not what we got elected to do, and that's not what the Republican Party's all about. And they have got to find their way again and step up and make tough decisions. And this is a Congress problem, not a president problem, and I think we have to separate the two.
Let me understand that piece, a Congress problem, not a president problem. Warren Tompkins, the president's poll numbers are at also an all-time low now. How do you see the presidential piece and the congressional piece, Mr. Tompkins?
Well, I try to separate it, and I think there's validity in doing so, and that the president's problems primarily are a result of the problems that we encountered in Iraq, and then compounded by the mishandling of the Katrina situation. However, Congress is the one that's responsible for passing the laws and adopting programs and spending the money, and Congress is the one that funded the Bridge to Nowhere and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that I think, at least people I talk to on a regular basis, understand that, you know, there is no the frustration is they see no difference between Republicans and Democrats right now on spending matters. And that means our guys, when the election comes around, will sit on their hands, and that's what worries me the most.
David Keene, do you see that coming, the Republican The Republican base staying home, is that the threat?
Well, that's the threat. I mean, you do not have a situation in this country in which Republicans are going to decide to vote for Democrats. Democrats didn't decide to vote for Republicans in 1994. They were so demoralized, they stayed home. And the danger Republicans face is that their base, or a part of their base, it doesn't have to be much given the closeness of elections around this country, just decides that the game isn't worth the candle and they'll do something else on Election Day rather than vote. I agree almost completely with what Warren said, but it is very difficult in the real world to separate the president and the Congress in the way that we might like to do it. The fact of the matter is that Republicans out there in the base are upset at both the Republicans and Congress, and I do think that the spending question is the crux of the matter. This is a president who has presided over massive increases in domestic spending, who has not used his veto power at all. It's a Congress that's addicted to spending. And you know what happens, and I think Warren's opening comments were precisely on point. When folks get elected to office, the most important thing in their mind comes to be, how do I stay in office? And when they get to Washington, they become socialized into a system, and they say, well, I know how I stay in office. I build a bridge back home, or I give some money to this interest or to that interest. And they forget relatively quickly what it is that got them there in the first place. And they don't realize that if they stuck with what got them there in the first place, they might even be able to stay. But right now, the Republican majority has been in office long enough that it has indeed lost its way. I think the sort of the signal comment on this was the report that when the first reconciliation bill went down and Mike Pence, the leader of the conservatives in the House, went to the leadership and said, we've got a real problem out there, and it's the spending. And Denny Hastert, the speaker, supposedly looked at him and said, Mike, you're right, we do have a problem, but it's not the spending, it's you. The problem is that a lot of the folks in Washington don't talk to the people in South Carolina or elsewhere that Warren's talking to, and they still don't get it. And if they don't get it pretty quickly and do something about it, they're going to be in real trouble.
Warren Tompkins, how could this happen so quickly? I mean, it was only 1994 that the Republican Revolution was in full bore, and it was all about reining in spending and cleaning up Washington. Now you've got corruption scandals all over the place. You can find Jack Abramoff's picture with Republicans up and down the line, and you've got spending, you know, like we never saw, or deficits like we never saw in the end of the 90s. How did this happen?
That's a good question. If I had the answer to that, I would be making a lot of money in this election cycle. But, you know, it just happens. I guess there were a number of people who'd been in Congress for a while that had a lot of pent-up frustration from having to sit on the back row, and when they got in charge, things got out of hand.
But is the GOP commitment to these?
I think you got to look back. In spite of whether people like him or not, when Speaker Gingrich was there, he ran a pretty tight ship. And we didn't see this. And I don't think things have been. I don't think the ship's been run as tightly. And some of the committee chairmen have asserted themselves a little more, particularly in the spending area. Because, I mean, it just points to the problem when you exalt members of one committee in the House and call them cardinals because they're subcommittee chairmen, and they're in charge of spending all the money. And when they are the exalted ones, and they are the omnipotent ones that everybody fears. That means you got a problem.
But what about Republican principles? They were so loudly and proudly displayed in 1994. Was that just Potemkin? Were they that thin and easily knocked over?
Well, I'm not sure, other than the fact that we ran through the 10. I think there were 10 items on the contract with America. And when once we got through the checklist, we forgot to regroup and come up with 10 more. And frankly, it's been since the election in 2004, I mean, basically, the Congress and the president have been paralyzed. I mean, I think they got off on the wrong foot with the Social Security debate that they couldn't manage, and then we had a series of other events, you know, come in between all of that. And frankly, I can't understand how that we can control all three and we can't get everybody on the same sheet.
We're joined right now from New York City by John Fund, columnist for the Wall Street Journal. His headline, Flirting with Disaster. We took it straight from you, John Fund. How deep is the flirtation going here?
Right now, it's running not at flood tide, but pretty high waters. And I think that the Republicans have between 6 and 8 weeks when they still are in session in Congress, when President Bush can still work with them, to fashion some legislation in areas that are specific concern to people. People might believe that they actually are having a positive impact in their lives, because if they go to the Congress with their current record, go to the country with their current record from this last Congress, it would be graded at best incomplete and at worst incompetent.
I mean, we look here right down the line, this most recent poll from the Washington Post and ABC, Democrats, big advantages for being trusted on the economy, immigration, drug benefits for the elderly, health care, corruption in Washington, even tied, essentially, slightly ahead of the GOP on terrorism and national security. That looks like a pretty tall cliff, John Fund.
Well, wait a second. One caveat here.
Yes, please.
Those are national polls.
Mm-hmm.
Races are held in individual districts. In individual districts, you still have members of Congress still getting very good approval ratings for their own personal work. I believe that the Republicans are not in danger of a 1994-style tsunami. We've already talked about the redistricting and gerrymandering and incumbent protections. But as David Keene has pointed out, they have a very thin majority. Even if they don't lose control of the House or the Senate, getting down to 51 Senate seats or 220 House seats and having a very thin majority so that no one can take a bathroom break on the floor, that's no picnic either. So the Republicans may actually wish that they'd lose control of one or both houses, because the prospect of trying to govern with a one- or two-seat majority may be more daunting than being in the minority.
Your own newspaper, Wall Street Journal, no doubt with tongue-in-cheek, but wrote today the conclusion, at the current pace, a Democratic majority in Congress would be preferable, if only for reasons of truth in advertising. John Fund, you say that the GOP majority is losing its team spirit. It was famous for that a decade ago. Where's the team spirit gone?
Well, Benjamin Franklin once said during the American Revolution that the Patriots either had to hang together or they would all hang separately. And what we're seeing now are committee chairmen asserting themselves, like Congressman Jerry Lewis of California, who's the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. And he is literally saying to members of Congress who want reform of pork barrel spending, the kind of pork barrel spending that Jack Abramoff abused, that Duke Cunningham abused, that also Democrats abuse too, because they get 45% of the earmarks, even as the minority. And Congressman Lewis
earmarks that build the bridges to nowhere and all the uncontrolled
the project that are slipped in at the very last minute, like the bridge to nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And Congressman Lewis told his colleagues, "I am not going to support a budget passed by the House if it has these modest reforms in it." That kind of selfish behavior is the kind of hanging separately that ultimately could hang the entire Republican majority.
I want to begin to hear from our listeners. A lot of them want to join us. Terry's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Terry. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks. Great show.
Sure. Thank you.
I just wanted to agree. I mean, I'm a registered independent, but I have voted some of these folks in, these Republican folks in, and I just wanted to agree with your guest on just about every point, except that they seem to sometimes be looking sort of longingly at the 90s and the Clinton administration, when the Republicans were supposedly standing by their principles. And I just think that's a little bit of a romanticization of the thing. I can remember the Fed chair sitting in testimony saying year after year, look, in the late 90s, look, this discretionary spending of Congress is getting more and more profligate by the year, and it's got to come to a stop. And I was sitting there thinking, yeah, that's right, and these are Republicans. What are they doing? They're not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah.
I just think it's getting worse. I don't think that they should go back to their principles again. I think they should figure out how to act according to them for the first time.
Terry, let us do a poll of one. You're the independent. Which way are you leaning this fall, Republican or Democrat?
Honest to God, I don't know what the heck I'm going to do. I'm so disappointed with almost all of the Republicans. I don't know what the heck the alternative is.
Terry, we've got it. David Keene, how about it? Last week.
Yeah, Tom, I'd like to sort of comment on that, because including your poll and your caller sort of wondering what do you do. At this point, these polls and the public thing are sort of grading the Republicans and Bush in a vacuum. Back at the beginning of the year, I was on a panel.
In a vacuum? I mean, there's an awful lot of
against each other,
events,
not against the Democrats.
Okay.
And that's my point. I was on a panel with Howard Dean, and and we were supposed to talk about the future of our party, and he spoke before I did, and when it came my turn, I said, you know, Howard, before you spoke up, I didn't think my party might have a future, but now I'm convinced that it does, because contests, the fall, are a contest between two parties and the districts between two candidates. People that are upset about spending and have every right to be upset at the Republicans on the spending side, once they get into the contest, you're going to realize that if that's the problem, that the Democratic alternative isn't the answer. After all, their criticism of the budgets are not that they're profligate, which they are, but that they're not big enough. So your caller is sort of reflecting, I think, consciously or unconsciously, that attitude, saying none of these guys are really doing much about it.
And yet in the 1990s, we had budget surpluses, we will recall, and I think a lot of voters
remember that. And
that
was partly because, and I disagree with the caller, that was partly because of the Republicans, partly because they were fighting the Democrats, partly because you finally had the kicking in of the economic growth resulting from the Reagan tax cuts. But let me tell you one of the big differences between today in the 80s and early 90s. In 1986, the United States Senate came within one vote of passing a balanced budget amendment. From my standpoint, it wasn't the perfect amendment, but it was an institutional attempt to deal with a process that rewarded profligate spending. The principal sponsor of that amendment was the late Paul Simon of Illinois. This was 1996. It was not a time of deficits. He stood up on the floor of the Senate and said, if we don't pass this today, you are not going to believe the deficits that we're going to be facing in 10 years.
You had a ton of Republicans
in that
Congress.
It's 10 years later, and we got them.
Yeah, we do have them. Let me ask you, Warren Tompkins. Last week, we had on, we were talking about the Democrat situation. We had on the guy who writes the Daily Coast, the blogger, Marcos Melitzis. He said, you know, his line is, the Democrats can't win, and the Republicans can't govern. Does the last decade show that to be true, Mr. Tompkins?
I don't think so, because I think if you look over the past, going back to the mid-'80s, if you look all across America, Republicans elected some very fine governors, and they had a dramatic impact on the direction of a lot of states across the country.
What about Katrina, the corruption we've seen now? Of course, it's not that it wasn't there before, but there's an awful lot now. We've got all these generals saying the war in Iraq is a mess, poorly executed. Just up and down. I mean, you've just got criticism, including from Republicans on many sides. I'm looking here, Bruce Bartlett, former Reagan administration Treasury Department official, as you know. He's now saying, if I had a choice and Bush were running today against Democratic President Bill Clinton, I'd vote for Bill Clinton. This is getting pretty wild.
Well, I think we have to acknowledge that mistakes were made in Katrina. I discount to some extent some of these recently retired generals. They were complicit in any of the planning and any of the follow-up over the situation in Iraq. So I think
complicit or following their commander-in-chief.
People trying to rewrite history right there in the present day. But I do think that we are capable of governing. The one advantage that we do have is that the Democratic Party they're completely void of ideas. And all they can do is watch us step all over ourselves a little bit, and that in itself is not sufficient enough to get them elected. But what everybody's saying and what John was just talking about the individual districts has some measure, and I agree with that to some extent. But I'm more also concerned about the fact that you got to look at the composition or turnout on election day, and in the past we have been able to skew the composition of that turnout in favor of the Republicans. But if you listen to the caller who just called in, and I listen to the people that I'm talking to, and these are not people that go to precinct meetings, these are not people that really give a lot of money to politics, but they vote. They're behavioral Republicans up and down. They have been for years. They joined the party because of taxing and spending and arguments over the size scope of government. You know, and we're losing that argument to them right now because we're not proving that we are different from the Democrats. But what you got to watch in a situation like that, when you have a disillusioned base, or you have the soft voter, the independent that traditionally is a behavioral Republican on federal elections, if they stay home, then you could shift the contents of that composition of that electorate 5 or 7%. So if you just take 3 to 5 to 6% off the top of what you would expect to turn out.
And if your base isn't
race,
fired up,
every race is close.
Ralph is calling.
Anybody who's got an opponent better start to worry about it.
We hear it. Ralph is calling from Washington D.C. Hi, Ralph. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Very well. What do you see, Ralph?
I'm pretty disappointed. I voted Republican and probably for the last time. Now, you know, I want to set the record straight on a few things that, you know, I'm hearing the schmoozing going on within this meeting.
Doesn't sound that smooth. It looks like some troubled waters out there, but what do you see? What do you hear, Ralph?
Well, basically, you guys have spent us into a hole, a financial hole. I foretell a collapse of the U.S. dollar. Under the Bush administration, Bush 2, we're looking at probably over or close to $4 trillion in debt.
Do you blame that on the GOP?
Oh, big time. Because, you know, they gave these tax cuts, and these tax cuts were only singled out for the very wealthy. And they can argue all they want, you know, but it works out to be 70-80% goes to the top 1%. Then under the Reagan administration, we got $3 trillion in debt. And under the Bush senior program, we got $1.5 trillion. By the time Bush gets out of office, we'll be $10 trillion in debt. And when you add up all the figures, the Republicans are worth about $7.5 trillion of that.
Did you expect the GOP to do it differently, Ralph?
I was hoping they would do it. But the one thing I didn't think they were going to do, I didn't think they were going to commit international suicide. When he came up with the argument that we were going to go in and invade Iraq, and because he had weapons of mass destruction, the first thing in my mind was, why would we do that? Because the man is not suicidal. He's homicidal, but not suicidal.
Ralph, you got a big picture painted for us already. Let us look at it. John Fund, what about the criticism here? It's like the criticism that Paul Krugman, no Republican, makes. Says, look, the Republicans can't now walk away from these deficits. Krugman says, you know, this was built, this was baked in the cake. If you have all the spending and you cut taxes at this scale, this is what's going to happen, and here it is.
Look, the spending has been and will continue to be a serious problem until Republicans wake up to the fiscal realities. However, let's be clear. There's one thing worse than deficits, and that is increase in taxes. One of the things that we can show is that the economic recovery, which is very strong by any standard, 4.7% unemployment, it really got into gear when the supply-side tax cuts on dividends and capital gains kicked in early 2003. And I have to tell you, there's one thing that your caller forgot. You know, he's predicted a collapse in the dollar. I've been hearing a prediction of the collapse in the dollar for 25 years. It has now been 25 years since Ronald Reagan was inaugurated as president. We have had over 300 months of economic statistics since then. 93% of those months have shown economic growth. Since Ronald Reagan started his policies of lowering taxes and encouraging entrepreneurship and business development in America, 93% of the months have been economic growth, and the recessions have been shallow and of short duration.
But here's
now,
this deficit. Everybody's looking at it. And what about the median incomes not doing so great? I mean, can you feel people worried about that?
Excuse me. If you look at the median incomes and also factor in increases in benefits, because most people are still getting better benefits despite the fact that some companies are cutting back on pensions and
increases in benefits. It doesn't feel that way, I have to say.
I said most people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Most people.
Mm-hmm.
If you factor in the increases in benefits that people are getting, for example, the better child care, the flex time, and everything else that are factoring in, most people are ahead. Economic growth has been up for 93% of the months. That is a record that you can't necessarily factor into the future. But if you raise taxes, I can guarantee you, you will have lower jobs and lower job growth, and you will have a higher chance of a recession.
Let's take a call from Columbia, South Carolina, Warren Tompkins territory. Wendell's calling. Hi, Wendell. You're on the air.
Yes. The whole situation just reminds me of kids. When something goes wrong, nobody wants to tell the truth about, you know, who did what. And it's the first a bunch of lies. Then you turn around and you know, well, we're going to beat everybody. And then at this point, well, he did it too, you know, It starts all the way from the top, and, you know, you have to dig and dig. Nobody wants to man up and say, I'm wrong.
But, Wendell, we're hearing an awful lot of, we're hearing some self-examination here today, and Republicans saying, we're in trouble, folks.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're saying we're in trouble now, but, you know, you still get a lot of the spin. They throw these numbers out, and you can make numbers do just about anything you want them to do, but when it comes down to it, You know, everybody started had to start hurting before they really spoke up. It wasn't just, you know, they didn't just come out and say this from the very beginning.
We hear that, Wendell, and thanks for your call. David Keene, what about it? There you hear the shifting needle of trust in the American public, and the polls show it again, trust in the GOP diminishing. You hear it right there in Wendell's call from Columbia. How does the GOP get that back?
Well, you have to get it back by going back to basics and being what you're supposed to be. People have, over the years, voted for Republicans for very specific reasons. We in this country basically have two parties. We have the pro-government, big government party, the Democratic Party, and the smaller government, less spending, less taxes party, the Republican Party.
Is that still true?
That is still true. Oh, yes.
Isn't this a big government government right now? Bush is spending more than ever.
Yes, that's the problem the Republicans face. That the Democrats are still the big government party. If you sell out those very values or appear to be selling them out, you can't blame your base for being disillusioned. And what's happened is that Republicans, and we're not talking here about Democrats, we're talking about Republicans, are saying, why am I going to give money to this party? Why am I going to go out and walk precincts? Why am I going to make telephone calls? Why am I going to vote if they can't stand up for what it is they said they believed in?
We've been joined right now from Manassas, Virginia, by Richard Viguerie. He founded Conservative Digest magazine. He's chairman of American Target Advertising. He's author of the forthcoming book, How Big Government Republicans Hijacked the Conservative Cause and Sold Out the People Who Got Them Elected. Richard Viguerie, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you again.
There's been some conversation already, but I want to turn to you on it. Is it better for Republicans at this point, given all the trouble out there, to localize the elections and stay away from George Bush and stay away from Capitol Hill, or to nationalize their effort and talk about the big themes?
Tom, it would be a total unmitigated disaster for the Republicans to localize the elections. Republicans do not win always when an election is nationalized, such as Goldwater in 1964, but they almost never win unless the election is nationalized, and that is just a prescription for disaster. Tip O'Neill famously said all elections are local because that's what works for Democrats. It's worked in Massachusetts. It works here. They are Democrats, big government. They are deliverer of services for the citizens, and when we nationalize the election, in 1980 with Reagan, 1984, 1994 with the Republican takeover of Congress, 2000, 2002, 2004. That's how Republicans win elections.
But what's the message? I mean, George Bush is at the top of the pyramid for Republicans, and you say, if you go national, and you say he has serious character flaw and he's governing as a liberal, your phrase.
Absolutely. While hope springs eternal, and I certainly hope the Republicans do well in the forthcoming election in 06 and in 08, but in my opinion, they're not going to make a change in how they're governing until there is a change of leadership, and that includes Congress. You just need to change the leadership there. In my opinion, they're immoral, corrupt, not corrupt in the sense of taking cash bribes.
Really?
But in the sense of legal theft. For example, George Bush's White House and the Republican congressional leaders did everything humanly possible in their efforts in 2003 to pass a prescription drug benefit bill. $8 trillion of deficit added to our unthinkable deficit now for one purpose and one purpose only, to take the senior vote off the table in the 2004 election.
But that's your immoral party, Richard Viguerie, and those are big numbers. Where do you go once you've made that kind of betrayal, is your word?
In my opinion, and it's going to be part of my book that's be coming out in a few months, is that conservatives need to think in terms of themselves going forward as a third force, not a third party, but a third force. And that has served us very well. The National Rifle Association has taken their issue, the gun issue, off the table. It is no longer an issue with Republicans and Democrats.
But does that mean going back to the wilderness politically, being out of power again?
Well, no. We can have an immense impact on public policy by pressuring both political parties to govern properly and responsibly.
Let's take a call from Jeff in Ashby, Massachusetts. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. What do you know, Jeff?
My reason for calling, I've been listening with some interest. I was an advance man in 1980 for the first Bush, and I guess that you would call me a moderate Republican, which means I could hold a convention in a phone booth these days.
Okay.
The discussions I'm hearing, and I've heard talk about how we had the sea change that came in 94, and I think there's some delusion there that it was people in favor of the contract with America rather than... I think the nation gets a little squirrely and nervous when one party is in power of all, you know, the House, the Senate, and the presidency.
Well, it took them a long time. The Democrats had Capitol Hill for many, many years.
Right, but then they finally had a Democratic president that was in there, too, with some power. And I think the two things back then that scared the American public into wanting divided government again were the initial pushes to nationalize health care and, in some respects, more of a noise issue, but the promotion of gays in the military.
So now we've got one party in charge again. Where do you see things going, Jeff?
Well, the thing that I see, what I was trying to get back to, was I think the two things the Democrats did, which was overreach and pander to their extreme, was in nationalizing health care and gays in the military.
Okay.
I think the thing that's going to bite Republicans is, and I think the watermark on that was the Terry Schiavo case, in that they took something that wasn't a priority to the public, something that isn't a federal matter, and it consumed the national media for weeks. And I think that shocked the American public into wondering whether or not they should have all levers of power in the Republican hands. And I think they overreached. The SOCONs are there. They are a power. But most people care about national defense, the economy, and those issues, and they really don't care that much about matters they think should be left between, you know, families or consenting adults.
And that looks extreme to your moderate Republican view. We've got that. Let us pick it up, Jeff. And thanks for your call. David Keene, how about it? Richard Viguerie may have another view, but do you see Republicans in their time in power having shown themselves as too extreme, is our GOP man Jeff's concern?
Well, it is true that politicians, when they win an election, always assume that people voted for them for the reasons they thought they should have voted for them. And much of what happened in 94 was a repulsion at the at what the Democrats were up to at that time. However, going on, and we look at politics, also take our own priorities and say this must be why these folks are popular or unpopular. Regardless of how you feel about the Terry Schiavo case or some of these things, the poll data and everything else does not indicate that these are the reasons that people are upset with the Republican Party. People are upset with the Republican Party because the Republican Party has lost its way in terms of its view of the role of government and government spending. To that extent, your caller is right. That's the issue. And it's those core values that make a difference that the Republican Party's got to get back to if it wants to win. It's not going to win or lose on issues, important though they may be to a lot of people, that the mass of the electorate doesn't make its decision on. I'll tell you what the mass of the electorate makes its decision on, and that's a view of whether the people in power are good stewards of the public's interest. And the Republicans that are in Congress, in particular, with the aid and abetting of the White House, which has not tried to impose any discipline, are not seen at this point as responsible stewards of the public's money. They're not seen as guarantors of the public's liberty because a growing government, as Ronald Reagan pointed out, pushes out the ability of free citizens to make their own decisions. These are the core values that the Republicans have to come back to if they, in fact, want to recover. And, you know, I think history is always a pretty decent guide. Back in the 1970s, they were even talking about changing the name of the Republican Party. After Watergate, the Time magazine had a cover, "Can This Party Survive?" And into all that stepped Ronald Reagan. And what he said then was that if we want to win, we need a banner of bold colors, not pale pastels. Today, the party's slogan seems to be, we're just a teeny little bit better than the other guys. That's not the kind of thing that gets blood flowing in the grassroots, and it's not the kind of thing that gets people out to the polls. What the Republican Party has to do is re-raise that banner, say these are the things we stand for, and these are the things we're going to fight for. Getting back their credibility is important, as we've talked about earlier, but unless you raise that banner, your credibility isn't going to do you any good.
Some tough numbers and some tough realities to hold that banner against. Jane's calling from Stafford, Virginia. Hi, Jane. You're on the air.
Hi.
What do you know, Jane?
I I actually agree with what Jeff had to say. I've been a Republican for 20 years, but I don't appreciate the right being hijacked by particularly the Christian coalition and big interest groups like the NRA. I was a Republican because I believed in limited government and fiscal responsibility, and it seems to me that those two have gone out the window.
Richard Viguerie, this pokes straight at your corner. What do you say, Jane's in the moderate crew? If you galvanize your sort of tough, hard right, are you going to lose Jane and voters like her? Is the Republican Party splitting up over this span that's emerged from the center to the right?
Tom, you and I have had this discussion before. I only accept the term hard right if I can hear you talk about the hard left on the Democratic side, which I've never heard.
Well, listen in.
All right. Let me make the point. The caller says, like to go back to the good old days when the Christian right, the people who were concerned about the social issues, didn't have a seat at the table. In those good old days, Republicans would get 43, 45, 47%, but very, very seldom would they get 51%. The three-legged stool that the Republican Party sits on today is economic issues, strong national defense, and social issues, traditional values, traditional morality. And when we added that third leg of the stool, we went from 45% to 51%, 53%, 55%. And it changed everything. So if the caller is a Republican and likes us to do away with the social issues, then be prepared to live with 45% of the vote.
Warren Tompkins, what about it? Richard Viguerie doesn't want me to call it the hard right, but yet there's a span described here. We have to call it something. You've got a kind of centrist right, and then Richard saying, come on, ardent conservatives, if you prefer that. Has the span become too big for the GOP to hold it all in one tent?
I certainly hope not, because I think it's what Mr. Viguerie is saying. I agree with 100%, because we do have a three-legged stool. We've always had some tensions and arguments within the party going back long before my time. It was the Southern Republicans and the Midwestern Republicans and the Richard Nixon Republicans wailing away at the elitists from the Northeast that wanted control things. So those tensions are going to be in a healthy and vibrant party, and we're going to have those debates. But the Democrats have the same problem too. But you got to put all this back in perspective to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking at bad poll numbers, and what we're all saying is, if the party will go back to what we're supposed to be all about and what we all came to the party for in terms of beliefs and philosophical bearings and leanings and things that we believe in, the nation's pretty well divided between the Republican and the Democratic Party. There's about 40% of the country is just going to be Democratic regardless. Of that 40% going to be Republican, and there's 20% in the middle that we're going to fight over in every election. But the most important thing for us is we've got to have our 40% or our 45% of the House in order, lined up, ready, willing to go into battle on election day.
Well, let me ask you.
Stay with us. Mm-hmm. Then we have to worry about fighting over
the rest.
Those in the middle.
Well, let me ask you, how do you go back to that message and that banner when you've got these realities standing there? Katrina has already happened. Everybody saw it. The war's going on. Whatever you think of it, it's pretty darn messy. The corruption is there. The trials are going to be going on. The deficit's not going to go away before November. So these are all realities. How do you hold a banner up against those, Warren Tompkins?
Well, there's no one easy answer to that. But first, I have every confidence that our president can and will restore the people's trust in him. I just believe he's very capable. I believe he can do that. And I believe that given a few breaks, he can get back on course. Now, Congress is another question. Congress hasn't passed an ethics package. Congress still is spending the money. Congress still is not able to get its house in order to act like Republicans ought to act. So I'm not sure how we enforce that, although I would like to see, as one of my senators, Jim DeMint, proposed the other day, that just because the Congress has appropriated the money, the president has some discretion as how it's spent, he doesn't have to spend the money. I think that would go a long way to restoring the Republicans' confidence in this president if he just said, we're not going to spend this money.
But that's never happened. No veto, and he hasn't stepped in to do that, even as some people say he can and should. Let's turn to Jackson, South Carolina, and Brenda. Hi, Brenda. You're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to go back just briefly a comment was made earlier that deficits are better than taxes, and Democrats run high taxes, and Republicans don't like taxes, so they run high deficits. Well, a deficit is a tax. It's a hidden tax. And when you've got big deficits and local governments are no longer getting support from the federal government, they raise local sales taxes, property taxes, all kinds of taxes, tourist taxes for hotels and so forth.
So frame it however you like. You're saying the bill comes due.
If I could interrupt, Tom, because you're
Brenda,
your
thank
caller,
you very much for that observation. David Keene.
Your caller is misrepresenting unintentionally, I'm sure, something that that John Fund said. He didn't say the choice was between Democratic taxes and Republican deficits. Deficits are a symptom of a problem. If you've got a deficit, it means one of two things. Either you're spending too much money or you're not collecting enough taxes.
Well, I think Brenda got it pretty right because it may not be taxes today, but it's going to come back sooner or later. The country has to pay.
Nobody disagrees with that. The question is not whether deficits are going to come back. What are deficits? They're a symptom of that problem. And the two parties have different answers to that problem. The Republican Party's traditional answer is spending discipline. You don't want to spend yourself into huge deficits. The Democratic Party's position is we need to spend more money, and indeed that's their position today. They're saying that the Republicans in Congress are not spending enough money, but that the answer to it is higher and higher taxes.
Well, we got that. That's rhetoric. We had a surplus. Now we've got a deficit. Richard Viguerie, we've got just half a minute left here. If you want to lift this national banner, what would it say that would be credible and effective in the remaining months before November?
Well, you've got to come up, as David said, with bold colors and bold banners. And you've got to go back to Republican platforms, go back to Ronald Reagan, go back to even what George Bush campaigned on, lower taxes, strong national defense, getting control of our borders, issues that have brought the Republicans to control of Congress and the White House. And that's what the American people want. George Bush is in the mid-30s in popularity because he's governing as a liberal, not because he's governing as a conservative. He wants to get back in the mid-50s. He governs as a conservative, and all of a sudden he's going to electrify his base and the American people also.
It's going to be a fascinating handful of months here. We're very grateful to each of you for the heads up on what's coming. Richard Viguerie in Manassas, Virginia, author of the forthcoming How Big Government Republicans Hijacked the Conservative Cause. Mr. Viguerie, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Warren Tompkins in Columbia, South Carolina, founder of Tompkins, Kennard & Associates. Mr. Tompkins, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And David Keene, chairman of the American Conservative Union. David Keene, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.